But let me get it on here. Make sure we're
streaming. Let's get it on.
Oh, wow. Judge Mills Lane?
Needs more Tabaski.
Oh, okay. We're going celebrity deathmatch. We're not doing.
Hey, it was him.
It was him. I still remember the. Do you remember when he did the People's Court spinoff with him?
Yes. And I loved it. Shut up. I'm getting goddamn tired of y'all.
All right. Here we go. Intro.
That is the most disturbing intro.
Well, that is the Just the Cheese Please intro for their podcast. So I figured maybe since they were on the show, I'll blend it in with ours.
Well, I'm just glad now my hair blends in with the size of my head. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, because that puppet's frightening.
And welcome, everybody, to Rat Salad Review. And yes, like I said, today we are joined by Just the Cheese Please, Adam and Tara.
What's wonderful up? Adam Dreher and the lovely Tara J.
Thank you very much. How's everyone doing?
Doing all right. Good. And then we're also joined by the regular bums, Lou, Manny, and James.
Oh, the regular bums.
But you're a bum, you bum.
Greg is not here, unfortunately. He's got to get a new refrigerator.
He had to go
away to blow kayfabe on Greg.
He had to go catch it. Get it right.
Oh, I'm going to sell him out. I don't care. It's Greg. Who cares?
Bang.
Yeah, but today, since we have Just the Cheese Please on, we are going to review a movie, and it's a recent movie that was just released on Netflix, maybe a month ago.
Motorama 2.
Motorama 2. Oh, I'm out. I'm leaving.
Never again.
Never again.
Hey, I only changed my opinion on it because of you guys.
How dare you guys try to justify that movie? How dare you?
That movie is a tragic waste of film. But anyway, go ahead.
We're not talking about that again. But no, this is a different movie. And this one's called Metal Lords. This one kind of fits with the theme of our show since we do heavy metal and rock music and all that stuff. So Manny came up with this idea to review this movie and have Just the Cheese Please come on. And since they review movies. And so I can't wait till we talk about this. And actually, I got to watch it today. It's pretty cool. Who wants to go first? Anybody want to start this off? To movie aficionados, do you want to go first?
Let the guest speak first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I did see this movie sort of in passing when it first came out. It was kind of on while I was getting dressed or doing something else. And I kind of didn't mind it. I thought it was cute. Adam, I feel like it was sort of a movie that was relatable to like kind of the way that we were, like friends of ours, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't the really hot girl they put glasses on and was like, oh, she's a nerd, and then like to take glasses off and she's like, wow, she's super hot. Like this was more like regular kids, and it was, you know, I don't know, not that we had a band in high school, we did have a band but not in high school, but I felt like it was a little more relatable with the characters as far as just like the way they look, the way they acted. I mean, teenagers are moody and awful sometimes. So I don't know. That was my first impression of the movie.
Yeah, I agree. It was funny because when I mentioned the movie to you, you were like, oh, I kind of already saw that. Because I think it was like on, you put it on while you were doing something else. So, right. And you were like, yeah, it's not too bad. So I put it on thinking it was going to be a good movie. And I actually was pleasantly surprised. I liked it. Of course, there's things that I'm going to tear apart.
Yeah. I mean, it's what we do, isn't it?
I got a whole
kind of who we are.
Yeah.
Got a whole list of things, people, and you're going to hear about them.
Yeah. But no, overall, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought I was entertained from beginning to end. I liked the characters. I thought the storytelling was, for the most part, pretty good. And I was really happy that I wasn't dreading this finishing it. So
it's
good pick.
Nice.
Good pick. you can get through this one at least, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it wasn't too long either. It was only like an hour and a half. So even I was kind of dreading it because I'm not a huge movie guy. And you know, I don't like watching movies. But and then
unless it's Halloween Live or something.
Unless it's
like
Halloween
that.
Live or Motorama 2, if that ever happened. But
the Kai Hansen story.
Right. But especially movies about like heavy metal, I'm always leery to watch things like that because I'm always afraid of it turning into like some really big cheese fest, you know, and being corny. And there was some corny moments in here, but they're kids, so you know, you would kind of expect that. But for the most part, I did like the movie. What about you, Lou?
So remember around Halloween, I recommended the films Demons and Demons 2 for us to review. To me, those are classic heavy metal movies. I'm not really a fan of Spinal Tap. I wouldn't really call that a heavy metal movie. I mean, that's more of like a satire type film. You know, I appreciate it for what it was, but I would never call it like it's a heavy metal satire film. That being said, you know, what other films kind of fall under the category of heavy metal film? Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg, which as everyone knows, is a loose adaptation of the Judas Priest story. Which was good, but it definitely had its hokey moments. So I kind of walked into this film with my expectations really low, but I ended up enjoying it for what it's worth. I, like Adam, I definitely have some things I'm going to nitpick on, but you know, I would say it's a good way to kill an hour and a half. So
I personally love the film. It reminded me of being that age. I didn't really come from a broken home, but I left home at a young age to be a rock star. As you can see, it worked out so well. I'm in banking, but anyway, it was both a send up and sort of a love letter to the whole genre. It definitely took a satirical look at some of the things, you know, how serious we sometimes take it as kids, the genre. It's definitely a music that empowers you. And I think the movie showed that. So overall, I thought it was a positive view, and I really liked the movie a lot. So and maybe I had a more biased view because it just reminded me of me and my friends growing up and how serious we took it and how ridiculous we could be about it at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And James, what about you?
Well, I mean, it took a lot. It was outside of the whole thing of it being a generic coming of age story, which I mean, I enjoy those too. I think it was really cool that they showed that, hey, a lot of metal bands have come out of high school marching bands.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the list is very long about that. And, you know, I thought it was really cool. I mean, outside of the, you know, the band's name and everything like that. I mean, we'll get to that later. It did take some very interesting things. And I did like how the music, like they used music to set the scenes better than I think most films have done lately. So,
yeah, I agree with that. And I think it showed a respect for the history of the genre, how fans of heavy metal, hard rock really researched the history of the genre. I mean, what's the kid supposed to be like 15, 16, listening to Black Sabbath album or song that came out in 1970, which does happen.
Oh, so yeah.
I did like that, you know, that, again, I mean, you don't meet a metal fan no matter what age, and they listen to a lot of older bands, not just newer bands. So
I actually thought it was kind of cool, like just a little side thing that it could have really taken place in any time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Without, like, you know, forget the cell phones and all that stuff, but like it could have been the 70s, it could have been the 80s, it could have been the 90s, and I kind of dug that about it.
I was going to bring that up because I couldn't tell when this took place because there really wasn't a lot of technology and all the music was like pre-2003 or whatever. So
yeah.
I really didn't have an idea of when it took place until much later when they started referencing Instagram and some other modern
right. things.
Well, until they started playing Ed Sheeran, you really didn't know that they were. Yeah.
That's right. I mean,
you really didn't know that until.
Okay,
until,
forget. Until,
but... Well, here's the thing: I don't know any Ed Sheeran, so I didn't realize
you're not missing Ed Sheeran this movie.
you're not missing a ton, but
I think outed yourself as an Ed Sheeran fan,
big time.
Hey, you know, I mean, it happens.
What about you, Wayne?
I'm glad you solved that mystery for me because I could not think who the hell that was, even though I knew those songs from the radio. But yeah,
sure, before, Wayne. Sure,
there is no Ed Sheeran albums behind me.
It's right near your
square. No, it's not.
I don't believe you.
It's sandwiched between Swans and Merzbow. No,
you were bringing out Swan. Got it.
Let's see it. No, I said before, I actually do like it. So I you forgot that I talked about it already, Adam? You weren't listening.
Oh, maybe.
Adam was trying to do the good job of tying this all in a nice little bow so that we can get deep enough in the movie, and then Wayne just completely,
Forgot that I forgot that the host went first and then the guests. That's not how it worked.
All right. Good night, everybody. And you can listen to Just the Cheese Plays on our own network because they're not on Red Sound Review anymore. And we'll see you next week.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know what? You remind me so much of Kirk Hammett because wah from You All Day, Wayne.
Speaking of Kirk Hammett, he was actually in this movie.
No spoilers. Let's get to that. We're going to discuss the film. I have every note written down, including timestamps. Not really, but I did write those.
I think he might have actually.
He definitely did. I saw timestamps on that bad boy.
Oh wow. Anyway.
I will say this though. The makers of this film told a better story than the way they ended Game of Thrones. So
is it from the same people?
Yes.
D.B. Weiss.
It was?
I didn't look it up until after.
How dare you?
Not, I've never watched Game of Thrones.
Me neither, Manny. Not one episode. I have no idea.
I had no choice. My father-in-law spoiled the entire series for me. He's like, watch the final episode with me. I'm like, okay, this sucks. I never want to watch it again.
Yeah. I've read all the books, and I was already kind of on the fence with those guys, and then the last season really ruined it for me.
Yeah, I mean, the consensus is that, like, they were considered geniuses while the show was in its early seasons, but then they ran out of book material because the writer never finished, and when they had to start producing original material in the last few seasons, it took a big downturn. It's either because they were incompetent or because they were rushing to get to their Netflix deal, because they basically used Game of Thrones to get a bunch of money from Netflix, and they wanted to finish Game of Thrones very quickly. So whatever, it's either incompetence or impatience, but, like, they did badly in the last few seasons.
I answered that question with a resounding yes.
You can't wait for a man who still hasn't finished the book before the last book.
Okay. And chances are he never will at this point.
No, this is going into Solomarian territory, which I'm very scared.
Yeah. It's been over a decade.
We're not talking about that movie. We're talking about Metal Lords, for Christ's sakes.
Well, I'll tie it together here.
Stay on topic.
Please. Yeah, I don't want a 3-hour show on an hour and a half movie.
Watch it. Well, I didn't want an episode of Motorama, but we obliged you.
Yeah.
How did this movie start anyway? I'm forgetting now.
They're in the basement playing the song that they play at the end.
That's right. That is right.
I actually thought it was great storytelling when they're going through the room and they're showing everything. And you hear the music, but you hear them screw up and restart. You know, it shows you what level of proficiency they have, sets the mood. It even pans over the picture of the mother cut out of the picture, which I thought was great storytelling
I thought it was Coco for a second with that.
But then 5 minutes later in a voiceover, when Kevin is explaining Hunter, they cut to that picture again as he says the mother is like gone or something like that. And I'm like, well, you told the story very well, like in a show don't tell kind of way, but then you assumed everyone was too stupid to catch on. So you like cut back to that visual and like explicitly stated it. And I thought it would have been nice to just have that in the opening shot.
I think the director should have left it without saying a word. You didn't need a big explanation. Obviously the mom's not in the picture, especially as you watch the movie, there is no mom, you know? So anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Dad's my total dickhead. Go ahead.
My problem with the scene, the Boss digital delay light was on. Where was the delay coming from the amp?
Listen, you nerd.
Of course, Lou would be mad about the audio.
I was pissed. I want tone. If your light's on, I want to hear the tone.
Just ask for the gabagool if you want tone, all right?
Actually,
leave the gabagool alone.
Actually, as crazy as Lou might sound, they actually hire people to make sure that kind of stuff actually.
Well, they done fucked up.
Yeah, they did.
It was Tom Morello, wasn't he? Like the musical.
He really done fucked up.
Producer, but he didn't direct it. He was just there to oversee the music that supposedly they were playing.
He is, yeah. And the kids actually did learn how to play instruments, which I thought was kind of awesome, but they didn't just sort of make it like, you know, some like haphazard, you know, editing job or whatever. Like those kids played, which I thought was really awesome.
Yes, because I was watching what they were playing, comparing it to what I was hearing, and it was dead on. So yes, absolutely. That I will give them yeah, credit.
They learned for sure. But the one thing I have to say is that a kid that, I mean, I don't know. I've played guitar. I played piano. I even played the flute for a very short time. I've never played drums, but a kid that played, what did he play? Like the snare drum in a band? Yeah. He said, yeah. I played a drum. He became pretty proficient at a double bass, pretty large drum kit very quickly. And I just don't imagine it's that easy. Well, I don't know. Adam, you're a drummer. Like, would it be something that would be that you could just pick up in like, I don't know, 2 weeks?
No, I mean, double kick, the way he was playing double kick is not something that takes years. I was
like,
years.
Damn kid, like that's crazy, but who knows?
He went from Ringo Starr to Joey Jordison in a matter of minutes. That is quite impossible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like that montage when he was learning to play.
I thought that was what was
I liked it though, because he was playing at the, I love Black Sabbath, so yeah. I kind of like watching him do the different parts and learning it as it went along. I thought that was very interesting. Also made me appreciate Bill Ward as a drummer, but it has nothing to do with the movie, just, you know, aside.
I will say this, yeah. Once he got the Ward swing down, I was like, yes, and I have to admit, Black Sabbath is my all-time favorite band. Seeing him get it in the movie, I got choked up. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, same here. And you mentioned the swing. Bill Ward had swing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Forget that about him.
So when he was doing that, it actually reminded me of a kid, you know, when I first was starting to play music and playing Doom 2 while listening to that album. might have been the reason why I am the way I am now, but listening to War Pigs while blasting demons in hell is it seems very poetic. But you know, listening to it was really fun. Now that, you know, I've had years of musical training with, you know, with band and all that, hearing the swing and everything with that was very interesting, because yes, it is very intricate what he was doing. And then also him getting all the paperwork to actually like play the notes and everything, like what he wanted to do, was very cool to see that someone had taken the time to compose the music, put it on sheet for him.
Yeah, I agree. And I like what Adam brought up in the beginning of the film. These kids are terrible musicians, and like every kid musician that starts out, it's that will to want to play. You have no idea why you want to, and you have your rock posters up of your heroes. I'm way older than those kids are, so my heroes would have been different. But like, I think it was Adam or Tara said, it could have taken at any point in time other than the technology. That's what, you know, the story is almost timeless. Heck, take out heavy metal. You could have put it even the early 60s, Beatles fans, but just, but other than it was a love letter to the heavy metal culture more than the genre, I guess.
I relate a lot to the. Who's got their audio out so I can hear myself? Who's that? Manny, you wearing headphones?
No, I don't. Is it me?
Yeah, it's you.
Well, I was trying to use my phone, but.
No worries. It was a small pickup. Just don't worry about it. Just keep going, Wayne.
Don't let it happen again, Manny. You're fired. But I related a lot to the drummer part, where, like, you know, he's fitting all the drums in his little tiny car and you know, trying to find a place. Actually, when he bought that big drum set and he put it in his room and he couldn't move, that was my room when I was younger.
Like, it's your room now.
Now I'm in my garage. But yes, when I was younger, that was exactly my room. You'd have to move sideways to get to the drums, to get to the bed. It was a nightmare. So I totally related to that part.
Yeah, and that rig must have taken like an hour or 2 hours to set up and tear down, right?
Yeah, it's right. Big. And the funny thing was when he got to the school and he had to reset it up, it like happened in an instant. Like he had to have been there for at least an hour.
Nobody's going to film an hour of something.
No, I know that, but also, they had it all back in the same spot, so it was kind of funny.
But that was weird. That was also one thing, and it doesn't really have to do with the movie, but it was weird that there was all these people hanging out at school all the time after hours. Was like, I don't think we were allowed to do that. We couldn't just show up and set up a huge drum kit and just be like, okay,
I'm going to put it on arrested.
Not like,
of my loitering.
Not really a thing. Yeah. I don't know. Well,
it was I don't know what you guys are talking about. We always had after school programs at my school.
And until went, like I 9 o'clock at night.
But then again, we're city kids. You know, city of Long Beach, city of Astoria. It's different than Portland, Oregon. So
I guess.
Yeah, Portland, Oregon, Jefferson County, Tennessee. You know, when you grow up in smaller towns, you know, you become part of the community. And
yeah, in more ways than one. But you know, it definitely this movie proves why every drummer I know drives either a truck or a van. So
But the one thing the drummer kept doing though, that kept bothering me, he would like stand up to hit the cymbal on the left hand side. I'm like, just move the cymbal over.
And his mom seemed completely unfazed that he had thousands of dollars worth of new drum equipment in his room.
Well, she didn't pay for it, so what she cared.
Yeah, she didn't care. Yeah, but that's true.
I was wondering that too. I was like, your son, you said that you couldn't afford $150 something in the you know, when they said that, but now you have a, what was it, $13,000 drum set?
No, it was $3,100 something around there, because it came up in the.
Yeah, I thought it said 13,000 something. I don't know.
It did. Well,
it was a
Guitar Center and bought the most expensive one possible.
The Amex charge was $13,000, but maybe he bought other stuff too. But yeah, the all in all, that they charged $13,000 to that card.
Well, Lou has in his notes $31,000. So
no, I didn't write that, but I did write this. I said, this is true irony when you're shopping for a double bass kit with Maiden playing, but Nico is a single kick and bass drum player. And I was like, all right, only I would care about something that's stupid. But I mean, seriously, I thought it was ironic.
Were you not happy that the Trooper was actually played in an actual proper part of a music montage?
I'm glad I got to listen to the Trooper without wanting to turn it off, because I'm so tired of that song.
Hey, I have a question for Adam. Adam, you probably weren't part of the heavy metal subculture or whatever. What was your overall impression, the way it was portrayed, the kids' love of it?
I actually, I was a lover of all music, and I was interested to ask you guys, because I felt that all the heavy metal songs and bands they mentioned were so accessible that you guys would be upset because it didn't delve deeper into the genre. It was somewhat superficial.
I was upset about one.
Wayne, you mentioned that.
Wayne and Lugo.
As well as the inclusion of Rage Against the Machine and Guns N' Roses, which I thought weren't technically metal.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lou.
Keep going.
No, I just thought it was hilarious. The one gripe Wayne said was, where's Halloween represented in all this? You're not always going to get representation, son.
But I mean,
I was waiting to hear the rage built up when they brought in Rage Against the Machine and Tool.
Well, Adam, Adam, I'm 51, and when Guns N' Roses first came out in 87, they were considered a heavy metal band.
Yeah.
Would they be considered a heavy metal band by today's standard? Probably not.
No. But so, I mean, so were Alice in Chains, right? Before that genre, whether it's alternative, grunge, hard rock, really had a genre, everyone just assumed it was heavy metal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if a matter of fact, Nirvana, of all bands, at first was marketed as a heavy metal band when they're on a major label. So,
yeah.
Exactly. Like Guns N' Roses slide. But Rage Against the Machine, I can't let them slide.
Rage Against the Machine is actually considered a heavy metal band by some kids or older.
But they would have never, I would have never had any friends that were into metal or even like Rage Against the Machine and said, here, lump them into metal and, you know, try to play.
I think they were lumped into new metal. I don't think they fit into
new metal. We're very lumped into new metal.
Well, yeah, we like late Rage Against the Machine as growing up, Adam. Like, what I mean, we liked alternative, but like hard, because we were like Alice in Chains fans and we were Tool fans and Primus. And I mean, I don't really know what is that even considered now, like that, because it's loud, it's hard, it's not metal, but it's not easy listening. So I'm not really sure what we would be considered, but we had friends like that. I mean, metal, you know, kids that were into metal playing D&D. I mean, that was very relatable in high school. We had a lot of friends that did that. So,
yeah. I always liked Sabbath, but I always thought Sabbath was a pretty positive band. I mean, you know, they were like Satan. Everyone thought they were Satan worshipers, but like their War Pigs is anti-war song. Hand of Doom is like anti-drug song. Crazy Train's about like everyone loving each other. To me, like a lot of their songs are very positive messages.
Excellent.
After Forever is the first Christian metal song ever written. We know.
Even NIB was like a love song more than anything, even if it was about the devil.
Yes, right? Sung by Lucifer. Yeah. Regardless.
Well, Adam, you brought up the music, but I think a couple of things. I think it was made for Netflix, so they got to make it. They've got to try to appeal to people that aren't metal fans, you know, that don't give a crap about that genre. And Black Sabbath and all these bands that you mentioned, even Rage, appealed to a spectrum wider than the genre that we're talking about. So I think that might be to do with it. I mean, if you put on something like Venom or Wayne's Precious Halloween, I you know, you're going to have people scratching their heads. So, you know.
Well, you know, and it also, yeah. I think it also ties in because, I mean, as a band geek doing that in high school, yeah. Like, yeah, Tool and Rage were my gateways. And it wasn't until later on while I was in marching band that I got to listen to guys like Dimmu and Old Man's Child and stuff like that. Yeah. So it was the gateway to get into that metal scene. So
yeah. Yeah, I appreciated the accessibility. I just wasn't sure how you would all feel about it because I've listened to the podcast a few times. I know you guys really get deep into some, you know, deep tracks and
I was fine with that list because when you're growing up, those are the bands you get to know, you know, and then those bands lead you to the bands that are, you know, underground bands. So I'm fine with the list of the bands.
I think Adam does as far as the band. So I don't know how realistic it would be. I'm not a teenager, obviously, in 2021. I don't know how realistic it would be for a teenager. I know, I shock myself. I don't know how realistic it would be for a teenager to listen to Black Sabbath first. Maybe that's your gateway band. I would think it would be something more modern. Maybe not Slipknot, but something, you know.
Actually, I was going to say Black Sabbath and Slipknot are probably the gateway bands. Because I know a lot of young kids that are into Slipknot.
I know a lot of, and I know a lot of young kids that are into Black Sabbath, but I don't know if they started out listening to Black Sabbath unless it was in their parents' collection. I don't know, Wayne, your take on it.
I just said my. Why is everybody not listening to me?
I haven't said my take.
Because keep talking about Halloween, and we just ignore it.
Lou, what's your take on the music they used?
I was perfectly content with it. I mean, I was one of those. I mean, I consider myself a metal kid growing up because, you know, I had the posters on my wall of Sabbath and, you know, and as I've told Wayne many times, and both of us had Def Leppard as our gateway metal band, throw Quiet Riot onto the list for me as well. So if it was hard and fast and if it was melodic, I dug it. So, you know, when I first heard bands like Rage Against the Machine or, Tool or Alice in Chains or even Guns N' Roses or, you know, Motley Crue, I dug it because it had that loud distorted rock guitar sound that I really loved. And whether it's called metal today or not, or whether you want to throw it under the banner of hard rock, or dare I say, I hate these terms, but grunge or gent, you know, whatever. I mean, to me, it's all relative. It's good music that has a certain sound and a certain style to it. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's for everyone who wants to enjoy it. So, you know, I loved the first Rage Against the Machine album. And James, you know that you and I differ politically, but we have nothing but mutual respect for each other. You know, the politics on that album is something I can look past because the tunes are just killer. I mean, they really are, the way the rhythm section is, the way the guitar riffs sound, the way the raps are delivered, you know, it works. It's just good music to me. And, you know, the one thing that I think is an unfair opinion about kids who are into metal is that they are closed-minded when it comes to genre, you know, everything outside of metal, which is so not true, you know.
Bullshit, actually, but yeah.
That's 100% horse hockey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I thought it was hilarious growing up when, you know, I'd meet, you know, kids in school and I'd be like, what do you like? And they'd say, oh, I like everything. Hip-hop, R&B, rap. And I'm like, that's three of the same genre. So, you know. Yeah. To me, I think this film definitely got that right. Sorry, no Halloween representation, Wayne.
Yeah, maybe on Metal Lords Part 2.
Well, when I drive that one, I will make sure that I add some Halloween in there and, you know, throw in maybe a Toxic Avenger for Lou. And
that's not a metal movie.
But the scene where they went to like a house party and that other band is playing there and they're playing the Ed Sheeran songs and all that. it was funny when that guy pushed the main character. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Hunter or Kevin?
Hunter.
The guy with the long hair.
Hunter.
That's Hunter.
He pushed him into the keyboard, and the keyboard just split in half.
I'm
like, what a cheap ass keyboard.
No keyboard could split that half that easily.
Well, I like that scene somewhat because it kind of, I guess this is supposed to establish that these kids are outsiders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what the movie doesn't tell you is these two kids chose to be outsiders, and the way they dress. And I'm not damning them because I did the same thing, but the way they dressed, the music they liked, and they sincerely liked it. But I also saw that scene and Taron Adams, since you guys are the Cheez-Its of the 80s movies, I thought it was sort of a soft homage to 80s flicks. And they always had those party scenes in those 80s movies and somebody would get in a fight or something, conflict. I sort of saw it that way. What about you guys?
I mean, yeah, I definitely did. I think that's like kind of a staple in a teenage movie, right? You know, there's always got to be the bully and there's got to be the kid that's picked on. I could relate to the kids that were being picked on, because I was definitely like the weird kid. And we also didn't have house parties like that, did we?
Right. Well,
we didn't have people like playing music and like dancing.
Yeah.
I'm like,
who had enough money to hire a band for freaking? Well, of course, their parents were off in like Geneva or some shit.
Well, I think that was the lead singer's house. Too narrow in Astoria to have parties of that magnitude.
it was the lead singer's house, if I'm not mistaken, which I didn't realize until the very end. But I think because he's like, invite everybody, seriously, anyone, invite. And I was like, this guy's inviting everyone to his house.
He was really nice. That was the lead singer of Molly Coddle. Yeah. Like, he was really sweet and just like, hey bro, it's all good.
And at the end of the movie, he says to Hunter, he goes, I'm sorry about what happened at my party, man. And I'm like, he broke your keyboard, why are you apologizing to him? Nothing to do with it. That guy was like so nice too. The Molly Coddle band was so, I'm glad that they like recognized that they were good people, because they were actually like non-antagonists at all.
See, you thought it was obnoxious, Tara.
I said I was saying it was like obnoxious how like so nice they were. Like, I'm just being sarcastic about it, because they were just like, anything that happened, hey, it's fine. Don't worry. Like, it's all good. You know? I mean, it was great. It was very sweet. And I was like, I even wrote like, I love Molly Coddle. But it was just, but it was just so like ridiculously, I'm like, who is this nice? Like, no one is this nice.
Nobody.
I was waiting for the heel turn. I was truly waiting for the heel turn to happen.
Exactly, James. I was too. I was like, he's gonna end up being the biggest prick ever. They're gonna end up like luring this poor kid, Hunter, into a dark alley and like beating the crap out of him. But it was all like, hey, it's all good. Hey, it's fine. I was like, all right, cool. You know,
he kept out the Cena.
He did because they set up the thing.
They
set up that he's dating that girl that all the girls think is hot, right? Because Kevin runs into that blonde when he goes into the bathroom and he's staring at her, and she's like, no, she's the cute one. And it was, and I thought he was like, the band leader was going to wind up kind of like cheating on his girlfriend with the blonde. It was going to turn into some sort of like love triangle, but like none of that happened.
Right. See, what I liked about like those three guys in Monte Carlo is because, to me, and this is going to sound crazy, but that is a band that I wish I could be a part of if I was in a band, because all they care about is playing the tunes, playing them with people you like, and just having a good time doing it. In my opinion, if you're doing it for any other reason than that, don't do it, because you're going to be disappointed.
You get all the social perks, but none of the work, right? And don't have to break a sweat, basically.
Right. But, just the fact that they appreciated being in the same space and playing the same. Not to jump ahead, but what Dr. Nick said was best. You know, if you're going to tour the world, make sure you're touring it with people that you could get along with on the 24/7 basis. People you could like hanging out with.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's a lesson every band learns, even just playing the local circuit. Trust me, I learned it. So.
I learned it the hard way myself.
Yeah, same here.
Which is why I'm writing new music with Wayne Noon, hopefully soon.
What?
Well, we'll talk about the werewolf.
A future drama in waiting, Wayne Noon. And...
I didn't like how Hunter was such a dick to that guy. You know, I was like, Hunter was trying to help you. Hunter was a dick
to everybody.
He was a dick.
I had a lot of friends like he was, so it didn't really faze me him being too much of a dick.
He reminds me of every single metal purist out there. that right. just think it's all about metal and everything else fucking
well,
sucks.
Well, it is all about metal.
God damn, I can't believe you'd even say such a thing, James.
You're fired, James.
Fine. I'll my go make quote. My own podcast with blackjack and hookers.
Yeah, I didn't really like Hunter. I didn't think he had a good arc. I don't think he had an arc, to be honest. But
No. His arc was, he softened up at the end. He became more acceptable. Yeah,
but yeah. He didn't really learn.
Right.
He had to spend a night in the freaking loony bin.
Yeah, but he didn't really. He only became humble because he had to be. It wasn't sincere. I don't think the movie even made it try to seem like he was sincere about it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Even when he apologized to that girl, it didn't seem too sincere.
No, it wasn't sincere at all. And the scene was.
He just wanted to get to the Battle of the Bands thing.
The 90-minute film. There's no room for sincerity.
I think he was honest to the character, Hunter. I mean, here's an angry kid. Maybe he's attracted to music because his mom left or whatever. I think that stuff is bullshit. I think you just like the music because you like it and then you get something out of it. But, you know, his mom left. He didn't have a good relationship with his father. This kid was angry at the world. And what his outlet was the outlet a lot of kids do, was music. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be metal. In this case, it's metal. You know, and that was his outlet. And his only friend is the only one that would help him try to achieve this shot at glory. I mean, this kid had no goal beyond playing the talent show. That was his only goal, you know.
Kevin say something like the only reason he really became friends with Hunter was because Hunter like saved his life or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, he saved him from a beatdown. Yeah,
well, and right. I think it's less about Hunter, and it's the show. The main character is Kevin, and he goes through an arc of that. He goes through all the arcs. Hunter's just that the side character, which everyone thinks is going to be the main character at first, but he's really the side character.
I agree with that. I think that totally. Like that, it was really. It seemed like Hunter was supposed to be the main character. But really, it was Kevin, for sure.
Well, Kevin was the more interesting character. He had more nuance. Even his relationship with the girl, it could have turned into, like you said, a cliche. She takes off her glasses, you know. But in reality, it was a sweet little love story in the middle of this, you know, metal parable.
Right. And then magically at the end she takes off her glasses and she turns into the hot one.
Well, you gotta have some of the film tropes in here, okay, James?
What I liked about Emily's character arc though was that they talked about mental illness without stigmatizing it.
I was really hoping someone was gonna bring it up, but if not, I was gonna bring it up. Because I really like that too, without making it seem like something that she is like. She obviously had feelings about it, but it was just part of who she was, and people accepted her. And I don't know. I really like that too. And I was like looking up there. I was kind of looking up articles and like trying to read a little bit about like the backstory about her, or if there was like any information, which there really wasn't. But the part when he's sitting there. In her room, and he's like, "Oh, it's your medication." Like she's like, "Oh, yeah, my happy pills," and she like flicks them. Like that's just, I mean, that is something like so high school. Like some of you just like, "I don't need that. Like forget it. Like I'm just like everyone else." But you know that you're not. I don't know. Like I just love that whole part of her. I thought that was great, and she did a great job of kind of, you know, acting the part in a way. She really did.
I thought they were going to do more about because I felt like, you know, I know I'm not trying to stigmatize, but. I never thought, hey, your first night of getting lucky, you're going to do it behind a Jewish temple.
I like that they did that. That was cool.
I didn't even notice that.
Realistic.
I was like, all right, nice.
But the whole time I was thinking, think with your dipstick, Jimmy.
he took care of it. He had the Scotch egg and everything. So let you know, make me.
They had a gigantic Scotch flag, Scottish flag outside their house.
Oh yeah,
it was like huge.
Yep. The only thing you're missing was the giant bagpipe music while at it, you know?
Yeah. So I do agree on Emily. I think that it was a very interesting flaw that they gave her, a character flaw, and I do appreciate that it wasn't stigmatized in any way. However, it would have been nice to see that flaw or that not necessarily a flaw, but that character trait have negative consequences externally to cause some sort of conflict or tension, because I felt like she felt very insecure about it, but everyone else was like, you're great, and like excused a lot of what she did. And I just thought it would have been nice if, for example, because, you know, the whole point about the being metal is that everyone's an outcast, and she obviously wanted to be in classical music. Maybe she was practicing for some sort of Juilliard audition or some sort of orchestral audition, and they turned her down because she had an episode or something like that, and it forced her to sort of reevaluate and decide to give metal a choice or something like that. And it, I mean, it's negative to portray that way, but I think, I don't know. I just felt that like it was a really good character trait that they gave her, but I just felt that it was just all internal, and she wasn't really the main character. You didn't really see a lot of conflict other than inside of her, and I would have liked to have seen that conflict maybe manifest itself externally a little bit more.
I mean, well, band teacher a "See you next Tuesday" and start screaming at him. Would be put, but no one seemed to care. I agree. Yeah, it was just like, if we would have done that in high school, people would have been talking about it for like three, you know, a month.
She would have been suspended, like I did when I told the guy to shut the hell up and right in front of everybody and God and the football team. but also, like, the thing that I thought was really cool about it is that they did kind of normalize mental illness and mental deficiencies, because Hunter is just talking to a guy who obviously is either on the spectrum or it has some has something going on there.
His behavior is disturbing. Yes.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and they're just ignoring it. They all know that he has something there, and they're like, whatever. He's a cool dude.
I was a fan of the two episodes that she did have, though, screaming at, by the way, random cameo by Chuck Klosterman, famed heavy metal author. He played the band coach.
Oh,
yes, he did. Chuck Klosterman from some of my favorite books.
Also, you know, almost killing Hunter. I thought that was well deserved. I'm not going to lie.
He had that coming.
But, yeah. You know, at the, I guess, pseudo apology that Hunter gave her at the end, where he basically said, you know, you're metal as fuck. I was like, you know what? You don't go out looking for validation because you're looking for it. But, you know, I mean, I kind of thought that was a cool realization that maybe she was taking time to think about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, right then and there, when she showed up with her cello and her black dress, she was like, let's do it. So, you know, like I was so happy that she took charge, that the character took charge of her life like that. You know, like that was really cool.
Well, the introduction to the character, I didn't know what was going on, because, you know, you see her throw her, what did she throw her?
A clarinet.
Yeah. I didn't know what was going on. You just see her lose her shit, and you really had no context, you know, in the very beginning until you get deeper into the movie.
Had a feeling.
Did you? I did not.
But I didn't either.
I thought it was Tourette's.
No, that was not Tourette's.
I knew it was something, because I mean, I've been frustrated at band two and have lost my cool. I've never decided to, hey, I'm gonna chuck this $1,000 instrument in the air.
Could have been that time of the month too.
Oh Christ. No way.
You fucking shrew. Anyways, I'm only saying because shrew. I've had bipolar people in my family. So when I saw that, I kind of took that as a warning sign. I'm like, she's bipolar. So, and again, not that I'm stigmatizing, it's just you develop a familiarity with it when you're exposed to it.
My one criticism, I guess, which I just thought of, is Adam brought it up. I think it's nice that they made mental illness not a stigma, you know, but at the same time, I don't think it was very realistic that all these people are so accepting of it, you know. You know, high school is not, you wear the wrong shirt, people, you know, it's just, I didn't totally buy that for that part of the movie, that everyone wanted to find it so accepting.
Yeah, nobody learned anything. I guess there was an opportunity to have a character maybe learn. And I guess then it's what Hunter, that was Hunter's role in this. But I don't know if he learned the lesson he should have learned about mental illness. he sort of just learned not to get upset at his friend for having a girlfriend, I feel like, more than he did to accept mental illness.
Actually, that would be correct. She could have been normal as anything, and he still would have given her, you know, a hard time. It had nothing to do with...
I think he was afraid of her being... I think he even mentioned a Yoko Ono.
Yeah, he did.
Kept saying, like, Yoko, yeah.
So yeah.
Totally understandable. What do you guys think of the chase scene, the car chase scene? I didn't picture him going up to him and just flicking the guy in the face. I thought he was going to punch him.
I actually laughed, like, out loud when that happened. I thought that was pretty funny, to be honest.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, if you've never been in a fight, you don't know what to do. You know, you just kind of, yeah. I liked it, the car chase scene. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was actually well done how they were going to, I was going to see how they were going to tie that together. Oh, by the way, the guy who did play Robbie, Christopher Lopez, has Down syndrome. So,
okay, yeah,
they get as much.
Yeah, I didn't.
But
I didn't
so
wanna,
what?
Yeah, I didn't want to be. Yeah, I didn't. I just didn't want to say that. I just saw that at the top of my head. I was like, oh, by the way. The car chase. I liked how they ended it.
Yeah, so did I. I thought that was brief. I did not expect that.
You know, I was wondering if they were actually going to do the whole thing where he's going to stop, or was he actually going to give it the go?
No, like a true 80s movie. For it. So, I think you could probably see plainly that was not going to work out.
Yes.
I thought the painkiller chase scene was perfect. I love
that. Yeah, and with Painkiller, that's actually one of the better uses of that song. So I was very excited for that because, you know, it is kind of a very fast-paced song. So,
two other points I want to bring up. It's okay, Kevin. I don't understand Dungeons & Dragons either. I never played D&D growing up.
I never have either.
And can people please stop referring to Rock of Ages by Def Leppard as a metal song? Yeah. It's not a metal song.
No, they weren't talking about Def Leppard.
They were talking about the musical movie, Rock of Ages?
The musical.
That's what,
yeah. Talking about the musical Rock of Ages.
Oh, I thought it was a song too, and I thought it was a joke for the uninitiated that they thought that was metal. Okay.
I did too at first, but yeah, they brought up a few times, and I'm like, oh, it's the musical. So. Yeah,
it could be a musical.
But she brings, okay. So the other thing about their relationship is that it almost seems like she is instantly attracted to Kevin because the only thing Kevin does initially is give her a list of songs, right? Heavy metal songs. And then she goes home and she listens to him, and then she starts to, like, I don't know, flirt with him or give him feelings. At the time that Kevin gave her those songs, Kevin barely knew those songs either. He had just been given those songs by Hunter. So I feel like she felt she was falling in love with someone who loved metal music, but he wasn't really into those songs at the time he gave it to her. Right. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting, you know?
I think also it was because she thought, you know, because you get the feeling throughout the movie that the theme is that she doesn't get, the boys don't talk to her. So this is the first time a boy has not only had the audacity to talk to her, but also give her music.
Mm. Yeah, you know, could be.
Show actual interest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he showed interest in her as a person. Granted, he was attracted to her because she was a female, but he showed interest into her as a person. You know, he didn't approach her like, you want a date. He goes, well, this girl can play an instrument. We could, you know, he respected her, you know, immediately. I don't know if she threw a, you know, clarinet or whatever reason, but he respected her.
He was,
by the way, she threw that thing very far. She was so metal. It wasn't a very short throw. Yeah. She had an arm on her.
Mm-hmm. He was taken back by the way she played that classical piece.
Cello Concerto number one. Yeah.
Yep. Yes. You're right. That was the attraction. You're right. It was her talent.
That's when he brought his drum set to the school, which is open apparently all night long.
Right.
Yep.
Your New Yorkers are showing.
What else was there in the movie? I like the part where he talked about some, like, bands being gay or whatever, and then he shows all the posters.
I'm sorry.
That
might have been sophomoric, but it was still funny. I don't care.
It was hilarious.
It was funny.
The gay thing was right on the money.
He's like,
and I want to listen to Goblin Cock. I really do right now.
You never heard of them?
I never.
A real band?
Is that a real band?
I didn't know that.
Dude, you're trolling me.
Swear to God, new real band.
I looked up Troy Nix. And Troy Nix is like,
too.
He's like some business management guy from like not Illinois.
It was played by like, what's his name? Joe Montana.
It's the werewolf. Yeah, it's the werewolf from True Blood.
I was like, I recognized his face. I was like, why does this guy look so damn familiar? And then I looked up, I'm like, who's Troy Nix? And it was not a real person. So I did the same thing.
Yeah, but there is a guy named Troy Nix. He's just like some business dude.
Yeah, it wasn't a guy in whatever balls of whatever the hell of a band that he said. I don't remember what it was.
Oh yeah.
That's funny.
I just love it that they found the most like of Judas Priest, the most gayest picture of Rob Halford ever made. Like short leather shorts and everything, shirtless.
Confession time. When I first heard Priest in the 80s and early 90s, I didn't put two and two together.
Nobody did.
When he came out, I was in shock. But looking back, I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh, there were symbols. There were signs.
Yeah, but it doesn't bother me. I mean, it doesn't bother me at all. Yeah, I look at it this way. I'll take a million priests over Ed Sheeran.
Man, Ed Sheeran's getting rug on this show. He's gonna be pissed.
Fine, I'll throw Shawn Mendes in there too.
I personally think it's cool that the metal icon, the metal god, happens to be gay. I just think it's cool. I mean, I'm not gay, but I think it's cool. I think it's cool that a genre of fans that were assumed to be homophobic were like, yeah, whatever. What about a new album, Rob? You know, they didn't care, you know. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, they don't care about his feelings. I mean, they just, you know, that was not at the forefront, which everyone thought it would be. You know,
it wasn't an issue. Yeah.
I mean, the time that he came out was when Voyeurs by Two came out, and that really wasn't that successful. Album he did after that was the Halford Resurrection album, and it's like, thank you, this is what we've been dying for. So
right, we wanted that kind of music. We were more concerned about the music he was creating than him coming out.
We care more about your merit, not the men you sleep with, Rob. Okay, we love you, it's all good.
Yeah, but it also goes to show how like metal really is about inner turmoil and feeling like an outsider, an outcast, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's common, right. And that can express itself in many ways for many causes. So I think, you know, it just fits right in.
I really enjoyed about this movie is that Rob Halford, who who everyone demonizes, you know, homosexuality and everything for being promiscuous and everything. He's the one guy going, be with your girl.
He's like, don't be an asshole. Yeah.
The guy who's been married the longest is the one going, sleep with every chick you want. It's just the funniest thing ever. Scott Ian of Anthrax, who's been married forever.
Scott Ian.
Forever.
Okay, yeah. Well, you never take advice from Scott Ian.
Rob Halford's been in a long-term relationship with a guy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm just saying, though, you know, there's
no, but I mean, you are right. That was a great scene that, you know, don't be an asshole or whatever he said to me. Halford was right. Was the metal god not right?
Yeah, he was totally right.
Yeah, you know.
That was the most enjoyable scene was the Scotty had come in there being the douchebag, and then Tom Morello's like, well, wait a minute. And then Rob Halford just comes in to dunk at the end, you know?
Yeah,
well, the last word should always go to the metal god, James.
This is true.
Yes, but all I heard out of Kirk Hammett's mouth was wah, wah, wah. I swear to God.
But that scene before that, where they were playing for that, what was it, a birthday party or a wedding or something?
A wedding.
Sister's wedding.
Yeah, the kid's playing the drums and he's like adding these like double bass things into the songs and
Oh, it did not fit. I mean, no. I thought that everyone was going to be upset.
It was terrible.
Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, you rocked
they
it.
Loved
like, no,
it.
You didn't.
I'm like, I started terrible. Getting all excited and everything. I'm like, wait a minute.
I digged it, but also you got to remember, okay, so internet culture time. You know, everyone loves the song, the dude in the cat costume in Japan freaking doing the normal song and then just going completely ape on it.
That is funny.
What the hell are you watching?
You've never seen that.
It's a very funny video. Never seen it?
It's actually funny. It's
freaking hilarious.
All right, send it to me on TikTok then.
Oh, God. Yep.
There was one thing, though, when I thought it was funny that, Hunter asked Kevin, you know, where he was when he was being deflowered, and Kevin responded, something came up. I would have asked, what came up? And the response would have been, my dick. I'm sorry, just had to throw that out there.
You're not a script writer. Song, you know?
Well, that was a joke.
Enjoyed it.
That was like a running joke in one of the Brady Bunch movies, I think.
Yes.
Are you right? Serious?
Yeah. Something came up. Like many characters kept saying.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, something came up. Yeah.
Something just suddenly came up. Yeah.
Something suddenly came up.
You know, but actually Lou, the character of that age probably would have said something like that. I don't know if he would have been as sweet as the
No. He would have definitely kissed and tailed, and he would have been like throwing high fives.
Well, you know what? I remember when I lost my virginity. I wasn't thinking about the girls. I can't wait to tell my friends. But anyway, go ahead.
I remember when I lost my virginity. I couldn't wait to tell the girl that I did it with.
Busted out the Lonely Island song that I just had sex.
Yes.
It was funny.
Almost got Tara. Almost got her there.
When Hunter got his hair
crying on the inside. Don't worry. Sorry, Wayne. Go ahead.
Way earlier in the movie, when they cut Hunter's hair and then he had to shave it, and then he says, "Oh, I look like Jason Newsted from Metallica." Jason Newsted was out of Metallica about that time that he had his hair like that.
Yeah, he mentions it. He says, "Oh, you mean the one that they fired or something like that?"
Yes, and that was the other thing. He didn't get fired.
He quit.
Yeah, he quit himself. So I thought that was
Well, see, that's a test for true metal people, because every non-metal person would be like, "Oh, he got fired because magically Rob Trujillo was right that was, you know, there to
do." He wanted to do side projects, right? And they said,
"Yeah."
Yes, you said if you're going to do side projects,
Mustaine got fired. Newsted quit.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what? That the director or the script writer should have gotten that right. I mean, I know that's a dumb little point.
A test, because that was exactly what he yells, and they cut it real fast as a joke.
I think Hunter looks at him like, "Are you serious?"
So he literally turns to start say he, and then they cut.
Oh, I missed that then.
It was a joke.
You know what's interesting is that, like, so he gets they come and they cut his hair, right? Mm-hmm. So he has to shave the side of his head. And then later on, when he's putting the white paint on, he's doing it, I think, mostly to cover up a bruise he has that Emily
gave.
I feel like his whole persona at the end looks different than he did at the beginning because of all these like bruises and effects of like people bullying him and beating him up.
He does. So it's almost like
that,
that
persona is really like to hide the torment that others are like, you know, putting on him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that point. Yeah.
There was one line Kevin said in the film, though, that when he said it, it hit me. And he said the line, "Why can't we all not fit in together?" And I was just like, that's exactly how I feel about like life in general. Mm-hmm. People care so much about fitting in or seeking acceptance. Why? Just be yourself. It's hard enough trying to be someone else. Just be yourself. And let's just be cool about it. I don't know. I thought it was a really cool moral that Kevin said. I was like, interesting how that was like halfway through the film as opposed to the end.
Yeah.
When you find your misfits, like, you know, like we all found each other. So it's all good. You just got to find your people and it's fine. You know, I think you're right. I thought it was kind of like a nice little underlying. I don't think it was supposed to be in the forefront of the message, but it was, you know, this people are different and it's all good. And we find our people and we go with it and just, I don't know, live and let live, man. Like at the end where I know you guys said it wasn't genuine, but I kind of think that it might've been, I'm not disagreeing with you completely, but I think at the end, he was just kind of like, you know what? It's all good. Like when they won, he's like, but look, we're the ones on the cover. You know, we're the ones they're talking about anyway. I don't know. I felt like
I agree with you, Tara.
He found peace with just being himself and being, you know, like just having their little weird group of people and being who they are and letting them do their thing. So
that's where I disagree with what was said about Hunter. Hunter does have that arc. He knows and everyone else knows around him that he's going to be abrasive and he's going to be an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not because he wants to be an asshole. It's just that's just how he's wired. Because he's going to do those abrasive things.
James, honest question: do you think he went through the hero's journey?
I don't think he went through the hero's journey. I think that was more Kevin. But I believe that he went through a change. He's not completely flat, but he's not a full round character either. Because he still has those quirks at the end, like when he grabs her cello stick and scratches his calf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nasty, I thought that was really cast. Cute. But I thought that was actually really sweet, and that showed that they really were like a unit, and they found right. each other, and they were friendly. That was a very sweet kind of moment to me, anyway.
But yeah, well, it's because I've seen those type of people. They don't do it intentionally, like for malice. That's just how they're wired.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the catalyst for his change? Was it meeting Troy Nix, who was his sort of?
I think it was going to rehab and being with Troy Nix. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely because he drops those knowledge bombs on him. That like, hey, you can't be a complete and total dick to everybody. It's not going to work.
Don't be you know?
A POS. But you're going to have to learn to deal with these people because you can't be a total asshole all the time because he's the same way. You know, he freaking's on there on the thing, tells the guys his car shit and you can't, and this pick sucks. But here's a better pick, you know?
I thought that was a cute scene too. I liked that. I found it endearing.
But he did kind of validate him by saying like, you don't belong here. You know, everyone who was put had a hand in getting you here was wrong. This isn't where you should be. So I wasn't really sure if he was going to change when he got out, but I guess he did.
Yeah, but that's a good point because I like the fact that he recognized this is a bunch of crap. This kid shouldn't be here. You know, it kind of turned the stereotype around, and he kind of understood him because at one time he was that kid. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as extreme as Hunter was, but he was that kid.
He's pretty extreme.
I mean, there was no drugs or anything. They never alluded to the fact that he did drugs or drank. And actually, no. Kevin was the one that was drunk.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the time. So it wasn't even Hunter. So that was weird that his dad would send him to rehab. I mean, like maybe some other kind of facility, but a rehab didn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, it also shows like how out of touch he was because he was a doctor. You know, he was just a plastic surgeon that he thought some rich guy. Because he's just some rich white guy. As my chair almost breaks again, that you know he I'm trying to keep on track here as I almost fall, bust my ass.
You're gonna really be into that forest pretty soon.
hey, I'll be one with the Smoky Mountains, baby. Anyway.
Four strikes, you're out.
Hey, I didn't know we were doing. I didn't know we were doing.
Playing baseball.
Yeah, exactly. But
Sarah, did you notice the lead singer of Molly Coddle's fingernails?
No.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, he had like black fingernail polish on in several scenes.
I did notice. I didn't really pay mind to it, but I did notice. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, James. I just
positive AFI fan.
I was losing track because of my chair. So you're good. Thank you.
I thought it was strange that they gave him the black nail polish, which is usually I think more associated with like metal alternative.
Yeah.
You know? Black metal or goth. Yeah.
Well, I think he secretly was a fan of their music because you know he's always like. He's always being popular, you know, he's always like encouraging, you know, almost to the condescending way, like you'd think he'd be a heel turn, but maybe that was the turn was no, he's actually into the music too. He's doing this band.
Right.
You know, that whole hospital scene, maybe that was in the '80s, there was this whole satanic panic and you'd have to look it up on the internet. If you don't remember, they would take away kids' records, just stupid metallic wristbands that, totally ridiculous, you know. So maybe that was a throwback to that. I don't know how old the person who directed the movie is or wrote it. So that could be something of a throwback to that in a way.
Yeah, but you're right. Who wrote it was in his late 40s or early 50s. I mean, I think
he'd be around like all of us, you know, sort of like our ages about. I thought that was kind of another sort of high school movie thing that they did that. It was like the popular kids, they won, but they secretly kind of are envious of the kids that are different. You know, they do like them, they do respect them, they did appreciate what they did, but they're just popular by default. Sometimes people just are, you know, you can't do anything about that. It's just, a lot of times it's just the way it is. So, but they were just like, hey, we really like did what you do, like you're so awesome. And they can't, you know, that they're in a different category in when it comes to high school, because we all know that high school is just a big popularity contest. Let's be real.
I hated high school so much I left, so I didn't like it. But
it's really like who you know and who you're friends with or who your parents are or how much money you have or you know how popular you are, and that's just how it is. And it's I don't think it's changed very much.
Definitely what that one girl was.
We've all been there.
In the school scene when they were playing the song, that one girl did not like the music at all. That was her.
I mean, I enjoyed high school, but I also knew that when I graduated, I wasn't going to look back and go, oh, those are my glory years. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people I know that are still kind of in that mentality because they were like, you know, lead quarterback of the high school football team or whatever, you know. And I was just like, oh, dude, none of that stuff really matters. I mean, like, you know, I look at it this way. Tara and I, we were theater geeks at St. John's University, you know, and that's how we met. And, you know, fast forward 20 plus years later, we're still here. You know, it's like, okay, glory years are in the past, but hey, we've moved
on.
We're
still geeks. It's okay.
I love being a geek. I'm all right with it. But I will say this, though, leading into that, leading into Hunter getting taken away to the rehab place, YouTube corpse paint video, legend. The security officer calling him Krusty the Clown, more legend. Nightstick dick tap, that was funny. Amazing.
That's funny, for sure.
Just taps him right in the balls.
Yeah.
It was a few laugh out loud moments in this movie, for sure.
That was one of them, that was for sure.
What did we think of the performance of the actual song that they came up with? Which was weird, by the way, before we get into that. They never really practiced together, but they played the song like almost perfectly. Like they
remember the sheet music, Wayne.
I understand.
Remember
that,
the sheet music.
They didn't play together, James.
Yeah, you got it, James. You got to play it together. It doesn't
that's
work.
Kind
like
of
the
a thing.
Well, whatever.
That's not
sir,
true.
It did not.
That's
yeah,
not
true.
True.
That's not true.
If you
could
sight read, you could play it.
True musicians can sight read and be able to at least make it sound good.
Okay, these are kids, though. I mean,
you learn sight reading in high school, though, and like in certain areas, like here in East Tennessee, it gets the ETSBOA, the honor band. You have to do at least two sight reading pieces, and they're not easy.
Where James comes from, the band geeks are more violent than the football team. Trust me.
Well, we had NISMA in New York.
Yeah, we did.
I honestly, I thought they were going to play a Black Sabbath song since they, you know, practiced that one over and over again.
Yeah, I didn't think
they're in the credits.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. I didn't think they would.
Yeah, well, I don't think so either. But, well, guys, I have to go get my kids. I have to go. Thank you for having me on, as always, guys. So.
Oh, well, right. Good to see you, Manny.
Yeah, thanks, Manny. Thanks for the selection.
Cheers, Manny. See you next
Bye.
Week.
Take
All care. Right, see you next week.
See you later. But
James, he was so wrong. I got your back. I know that, you know, sight reading.
I was ready to come at him with that one. I was like, wait a minute. I got you on this one.
So what did you guys think of this actual song? Was that right?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a good song.
Ben.
I'm trying to remember what it was called.
It was called
Lick My Love Pump.
Machinery of Torment or something. Yeah.
I thought the funny thing is him yelling it at the beginning and then like nobody's reacting to it, but at the end, I mean, who hasn't had a good old fashioned college of a high school dance mosh pit?
Right.
Well, we never had battle of the bands. I mean, that would be awesome if we did, but we never had any of that stuff.
Well,
but it was an accidental mosh pit.
Yes, right. That was always the best ones.
Yeah, but no, I wasn't a big fan. But I did think it was interesting that none of the kids seemed to like it until the vocals came in, and then they're like, "Oh, this is okay." And I'm like, the vocals to me did not approve that song at all.
I thought the music was actually great. Yeah. The vocals were not so much. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I'm proud to say that at the end of my wedding, there was a we moshed it to Flogging Molly, so I'm proud of that.
Nice. Well, the only battle of the bands I ever went to was a one in Tennessee Valley Fair, and it had bands like 10 Years and Copper and, you know, Straight Line Stitch, bands that were actually able to make it. Mm. Whitechapel was still in middle school at that time. Lou,
I was in a battle of the bands. Three times at the Crazy Donkey in Farmingdale. I was 28. So
the Crazy Donkey. Oh man. Yeah. I think the closest that we really ever got to any kind of, we never had a battle of bands that we seeing like our friends play was Right Track In and Freeport? Adam? Yeah.
I never Freeport. Went there. You guys yeah. went saw shows there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was someone was playing. I don't remember who, but we knew them. And we were like 16, I think, when we went.
We were in high school, I know, but I don't remember.
Definitely in high school. Yeah.
Lou froze.
He's doing the thing where you guys can keep talking. He's just there.
Well, at least he's not making a dumb
great attentive face there. He's just letting you be warm and
the picture. Yeah, it's a nice warm smile.
It's just like the COVID cutout, you know, like.
So it's better than the last time.
I'm unfrozen.
Yeah, you did it again.
He's gone.
Bye, Lou.
Bye, Lou.
Good night, everybody. So yeah, I didn't expect the end either, where the amp fell on his leg. That kind of sucked.
Yeah, that was
pretty gnarly. I thought that was pretty bad.
I wish they would have finished out the song, and that was kind of an awkward.
Well, what's more metal than your bone sticking out? I guess
finishing the song while your bone's sticking out.
Right.
I guess.
Well, he flies up in the air, right, while he's playing the solo, because he's been working on the solo for the whole movie.
Yeah, because he's all in his own head.
Yeah, and then something this Rube Goldberg series of events happens, and the stack falls on top of him.
I didn't really understand why it fell though. Like I couldn't. I mean, when I was watching,
by a mosh pit
because the jock pushed the monitor into Hunter, and he fell.
His foot. Yeah. Okay, his foot was on the monitor. Okay.
Then he was the catalyst for the Rube Goldberg to start.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you for using that. I need to use that more in my life.
We don't have enough Rube Goldberg mentions on Rat Side Review. That's pretty cool.
And then that kid comes up at the end and gives him the horn sign. Oh, that was kind of funny.
Robbie.
Yeah.
He was cute.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they had a character like Robbie who was just a good kid. So
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And then to see them all together in their little practice room and working on some new songs, it seemed like. So maybe we'll get a part two of this Metal Lords thing. I don't know.
I mean, they're playing War Pigs at the end, and that was like really them sitting there playing that song, and it looked like they actually had fun, which I love that about movies. Like I love to watch some of my favorite things are outtakes, because sometimes you really see the characters sort of gelling together and like how they look at each other and the smile, I love that. So I watched that whole part and I thought it was very sweet.
Mm-hmm. You know, what was weird is when they obviously the name of the band throughout the whole movie was Skullfucker, right?
Right.
We've been on YouTube long enough so I can say it, but they can't go on to the Battle of the Bands, so they have to change her name. So she goes running out. She runs into the janitor. The janitor like knows her name. He's like, "Hi, Emily, what's going on?"
I realize that too.
Why does the janitor know her name and like willing to do anything for her?
Well, you know what? I actually thought of that too. And I will say, like being like a weird kid or someone that's just different or whatever, I feel like you're friendly with people that you normally would sort of like people would see beneath you. And also she obviously spent a lot of time at the school, right? She was always practicing at the school.
Yeah, that's true too.
So I feel like that there was sort of like a rapport there, and she was just kind of a nice kid that wanted to just play music. So I did think that though. I was like, that's kind of weird. And I'm like, you know what? No, it's actually not that weird.
I didn't see it as weird at all, but that's because, being one of those outsider kids, and yeah, you find different parental, I wouldn't call them like mentors, but people that you can confide with that give you a different aspect and something to look at. So I think that's why she knew she could run to him and that he would have the answers, mm-hmm. And she had a rapport with him.
Yeah.
So I saw that part. I thought that was really nice. I thought the whole ending of the movie was tied up really well with the Battle of the Bands. I thought that was done really well. I always forget the other band name, Molly, whatever it was.
Molly Coddle.
Molly Coddle.
That they stuck to, even though the lead singer might not like it, because you could tell when they were trying to recruit Kevin that they don't like that they're playing these easy songs, but they're not good musicians and they know that it's the popular music, so they're just doing it.
Right.
So they do the Imagine Dragons song, everyone loves it, and they're just kind of like doing their thing, but then the other Skullflower comes out and actually plays something good, which is great that they actually had another cello, because we need more cellos in metal music. Apocalyptica cannot have just the monopoly of cello metal music.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm not a fan of Imagine Dragons, but they did that song. I mean, I don't know if they were really playing or not, but it sounded pretty good. I thought decent for, high school kids.
James, I don't know how I feel about you knowing that was Imagine Dragons.
Yeah,
I have nephews, Wayne. I have.
I know, but I hear these songs on the radio, and I don't read well.
No, I didn't know it.
I like their first album.
Yeah,
well, you're fired too, then I guess. Sorry, Lou.
You can't fire me. You need me.
Plenty of guitarists. I don't need
you're not firing me. I'm leaving this band. All right. I'll play the Newstead. I got more better things to do.
I got the perfect job for a cowbell soloist in Blue Oyster Cult, Wayne. I don't need this shit.
I got a fever. And the only thing that can cure it is more cowbell.
They were trying to come up with female metal performers. And the only thing they could think of is Joan Jett and Lita Ford.
Lita Ford. I was like, that was ridiculous. And they're like, that's the runaways. That's also the run. I'm like, what is going on right now?
This is modern. So you have like bands like Arch Enemy, freaking Ginger,
White Zombies, right?
What about, did people forget Doro? I mean, you know, the metal queen herself.
Well, that would be like putting Halloween on air. I mean, Doro was very
no, there's a difference.
I mean, no, but Leader Kenny considered metal.
Ginger, I guess they know about Ginger. They know about freaking, you know, you could have done Lacuna Coil. Yeah, right. You could have put in a bunch of popular bands with female lead singers. I mean, you don't have to go Arch Enemy, but
yeah, but you know what it is? They seem to be more into the classic metal stuff, so that I can understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're naming a lot of modern stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, I could have nitpicked, like, you know, and say, yo, how come they're not talking about, like, the new metal bands that are out there killing it? Like, you know I mentioned Periphery all the time. You know, to me, they're, you know, the best of the bunch that's out there. But even I was kind of like, well, because, you know, to the average lay person, the casual fan, you know, they know Sabbath, they know Rage, they know Tool, they know Dio. So you know, I was just like, well, you know, if anything, what this film might do is reinforce the idea, hey, let me kind of go into the well and see what else is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they'll discover Halloween, Wayne.
And you know, can they listen to this band called Spirit Box?
Who's apparently opening for Ghost.
Yes, they are, and I can't see them. They're not coming near me.
Well, I don't think it's a secret that I'm not a big metal fan, and I have most of these bands you guys talk about. I'm like, I don't know any of this. I mean, I think the most obscure one that I've actually heard is Mastodon, and that's not really that obscure. But I guess if you're not into metal, I really am not. I'm not a metal person, so it's like probably not the best person for this. But I did like the movie, and like, I mean, I could bring my girl parts to it and talk about how sweet everyone was.
We're all happy to see you brought your girl parts.
Actually, honestly, that was also a really good way they brought in Blood and Water from Mastodon.
Thunder
and Water. Sorry, my bad. Thank you for reminding me what the song was. Okay, we need good thing they brought in the Mastodon song.
We need to make Adam and Tara a playlist.
So yeah, I'd listen to it. But I do remember when because I had the closed captioning on, and when it first started over the opening credits, it was an Avenged Sevenfold song.
Hail to the King,
Who I don't really know, but I was like, I think this is a bad sign, but I'm not sure, because I thought it was going to be all like new metal, because I feel like they're a newer band, right? Yeah. But then it was pleasant surprise. It was all stuff that I knew.
It was like older,
70s, 80s, 90s, you know?
Except for Judas Priest song they bring out? Painkiller?
That's a killer song. I would have liked to have heard a more obscure Avenged Sevenfold song, only because like I've been following them since, 20 years, since Sound of the Seventh Trumpet came out. And I thought they were great then. I still think they're great now. So, you know, but Hail to the King, I think, is probably one of their more popular songs. So
what's the name? Sound of the Butt Trumpet? What?
Sounding the Seventh Trumpet. What are you thinking?
Read your Bible.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Heathen.
Thank you, James.
What do you guys think of the movie? I mean, we all kind of liked it pretty much. Was there anything that anybody like outright hated about this movie?
I wanted somebody to slap Hunter more for a good reason than just Emily doing it.
No.
I don't really think there wasn't anything. I mean, there was some like the basic high school cheesiness that goes on with most movies, but you know, with that in that genre, but I actually thought it was cute, and I thought it was pretty well done, and I did not dislike it even the second time around.
Very cool.
Well, I just hated the fact that the delay pedal was not on, but the light was.
Oh, Lou. Get over it already.
Can't help it. Look, I'm not a gatekeeper, but I want honesty. I want integrity.
Next thing you know, he's going to be mad about what type of freaking pedals he had there, and they weren't matching properly, you know?
How did you know I was looking?
The technicals were good. The Lou, cinematography, the editing.
Lou, I knew you. That's why I knew that you'd look at that.
We interrupted Adam. I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
No, I just... Sorry. No, I was just saying that the technicals were good. Cinematography, editing, sound design, you know. Really had no nothing. The story was solid.
Yeah. My only thing was go ahead.
I have to say it's one of the better Netflix movies that I've seen. I will say, though, them playing War Pigs, I had just played War Pigs live on stage on Saturday in Brooklyn. So I was still, you know, in that high from having played it. So seeing it in the film and seeing it, you know, through the eyes of a kid who's playing it for the first time, it's like that excitement for the song itself and for the music, it's still there for me. So, you know, like I said, it was hard not to get choked up watching that as he was playing along with it.
So. I get that. That's cute. I like that. You're so sweet, Lou.
I'm a sentimental fool. What can I say?
It bothered me that he was hitting the hi-hats with the stick, because that's not how you play that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a drummer, so I don't know.
I'm not a drummer at all. Right.
And then he was a little bit too enthusiastic with some of the way he was playing, but otherwise it was good.
I've seen plenty of drummers do that, so
yeah, I know.
The only thing I was mad of is that they said he was a drummer and like he played a single drum and he's playing like the most basic snare beat I've ever heard in my entire life. Right, when every single marching band drummer I know that does a snare drum has to like, you know, break sticks on the freaking on the side of it. They're going nuts. So. Yeah. That was very, it was like, I don't believe you're a drummer because you're just acting way too tame for this. You're not acting like a drummer.
I played snare in the marching band. I played snare for 1 year and then I played toms for the next 3 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice. I was baritone. So I had to hear you guys try to make me deaf behind me.
Yep. I mean, it was a competition for real.
It truly is.
I was primarily a trumpet and baritone horn player in the marching band, but there was one time they're like, Lou, we need a snare. I'm like, I don't play drums, but Jason Crawford, who we went to college with, Tara, I said, can you teach me a paradiddle on the snare? And he said, how much time you got? I said, 10 minutes. He said, I only need 5. So he showed me how to do a quick like drum rolls on the snare. Like, and I'm like, all right, drum, I got it.
That's fine. I thought you played the skin flute.
Only in your dreams.
Speaking of that, did you see who the new spokesperson for AARP is?
Is it Debbie Gibson?
It is Debbie Gibson.
Wait, what is? What happened? Who's Debbie? What's going on with Debbie Gibson?
Debbie Gibson is the new face of AARP.
We're dying, not just getting old. We're dying.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, I'll take solace in the fact that she is a little bit older than me, right? We're not the same age, I don't think.
No, she's older than all of us.
She's not 60, whatever, though, I don't think.
Yeah, isn't
she's got to be 50 because she's on ARP.
She's on ARP, yeah. So yeah.
Is that all it takes to be on ARP now is 50?
I thought it was like 60-something, I know.
No, it's 50, so we're all almost there.
Yeah.
Boy.
Not me, Just for Men keeps me young.
Think for yourself, Wayne. I still got decade over for that. So,
well, seeing that we're almost there, it is most of our bedtimes because it's 9:30.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, you oldies.
9:30, and I enjoyed this show very much. Had a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun watching this movie and getting to hear your guys' opinions on it. And thank you, Adam and Tara, for joining us.
Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
No problem. I did this episode sober.
Wow. Yeah, and if you guys want to do any movies, you're always welcome to come on.
Absolutely, anytime.
We're waiting for the invite.
Well, one of the highlights of my podcasting career was being on Just the Cheese Please to discuss this guy,
of course, Toxic Avenger, your favorite, Toxic Avenger.
Which I'm editing the video for it right now. So hopefully that'll be out soon. Just so you know, Tara and Adam, you guys are invited to Music is Life podcast, so we could discuss our top 10 favorite 80s soundtracks.
Yeah, I'm there for
it. Yes, we definitely need to do that. That's a good one. I like that.
Excellent. Sure. You'll probably be shocked at what my number one is. I haven't figured it out either, but you'll know.
I'm like, no spoilers.
Purple Rain is not on there. I swear to God.
Which one?
Purple Rain is not in there.
You don't want it there, or it should be there?
No, if it's not there, if it's not in your list, I swear.
I'm not telling you. You have to watch the episode. Hasn't even been recorded yet, James. Take it easy.
I'm in like a few movie soundtracks.
I like, he's getting excited.
Last Action Hero's got a good soundtrack.
That's 90s.
No, I know. I'm just saying, I don't really like soundtracks, but that one I liked. The Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey I liked.
That's 90s.
That's 90s.
That's 92.
That was 92? Oh,
Airheads, that was 91. Airheads got a good one.
Wayne, shut the fuck up. That's 94.
That's 94. That's even worse.
That one I knew was 90s.
That's it. That's all I like.
You like Not Another Teen Movie? That's 2001.
No, I don't like that one.
God damn it.
What about Queen of the Damned? That was 2001.
No.
I would like to hear the Queen of the Damned songs with Jonathan Davis singing them personally.
Who cares? Where can we find Just the Cheese, please?
Well, you can find it on all the major podcasting sites like iTunes and Spotify and iHeartRadio and Google Podcasts. But you can also find it on the Rat Salad Review website.
Oh, my God, you can.
Oh. Isn't that correct? Cool. I believe so.
Yeah, I think so. I think I
hope so.
Right alongside this podcast.
That's right. When are we going to hear a new episode? Because it's been a while.
Yeah, I was I was switching jobs, and they sent me away for training. So it's been about a month. And usually we try to release one at least every 2 weeks, if not every week. So I got a bunch queued up. They should be released starting this week, and should have two or three in a row.
It's going to start coming out. You're not even going to be able to keep up. It's going to be crazy.
That's how we like it. What is the next one going to be?
So I could tell you the next two. The next two are going to be Summer School and then Howard the Duck.
Oh, Howard the Duck.
Oh, my God. I can't wait for that.
I would love to do that one. But
no, Chainsaw and Leah Thompson. Oh, love it.
I remember watching it when I was a kid.
And Jeffrey Jones. Don't forget Jeffrey Jones.
Creepazoid. Anyway.
I had no idea that was like a comic book. Back when I first saw it,
it's a Marvel comic book.
I didn't know that either until I started delving into it. I was like, "This is a was a comp. People bought this." I mean,
yes.
I don't know why.
Not
I
exactly
it
that, kid, but yes.
Well, the significance of Howard the Duck is that it's the first time ever the band Kiss appeared in comic book form.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, and if you've watched any of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy too.
Well, that was an Easter egg.
Howard the Duck is in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah. Yes. The collector, he's got like a bunch of oddities and like in the back corner. Like he's prominently displayed, but he's one of his like collections is Howard the Duck in a cage drinking a martini.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. Okay. Fun.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thank you, Wayne.
And you guys watching, you can catch us at ratsalaryreview.com. Please hit subscribe on YouTube and iTunes and Spotify and Anchor and Stitcher and wherever else you can find us.
And we're on that TikTok now too.
We've been on that TikTok for probably like 2 years now.
Yeah, it's Rat Salary Review, 1,800 followers at this point. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, it's fun. Been a lot of fun times. And I actually got to do some new TikToks because I got some new stuff to show you guys. But anyway, hit subscribe and we'll see you next week with our AC/DC Bon Scott episode. Right? I think so.
That's right.
All right.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.
Demone. Right.
See ya. How do I turn this off now?
It's the off button.
I don't know. Figure it out, old man.